Welcome to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Sometimes a long road trip can help put things in perspective. And our next guest, a reporter and producer from NPR, hit the road earlier this summer to get a big picture look at how colleges and universities around the country are handling fall semester during a global pandemic. A few weeks ago, they caught up with students as they moved in, or in North Carolina's case, moved back out. They also spoke with parents, epidemiologists, and even made a stop here at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign to learn more about coronavirus saliva testing and contact tracing. We're joined now by Alyssa Nadworny, who's a reporter for NPR and NPR's education team. You might also recognize her from NPR's Life Kit podcast. Alyssa, thanks so much for joining us on the 21st.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'd also like to welcome Lauren Magaki, who's a senior producer with NPR's education team and Alyssa's co-pilot on the reporting trip. Lauren, thank you for being with us as well.
Yeah, thank you.
And listeners, you're, as always, welcome to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. If you have questions about what our guests have seen at various colleges across America as they've been reopening and in some places reclosing this semester, please give us a call, 800-222-9455. Maybe like me, you're curious about just what it's like to actually travel somewhere other than the grocery store during 2020. Those are some of my questions. Give us a ring, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. So, Alyssa, I want to begin with this idea that you had. I wonder, was it difficult to convince your editors at NPR to even let you take this road trip? And what was your pitch to them?
Yeah, it was a bit difficult. You know, most of us at NPR are working remotely, or we certainly have been since March. Which means a lot of recording and calls in your bedroom, wherever you are. And so, you know, I've been reporting on what the fall would look like since late March. So I did a story on like six ways fall could look a month into the pandemic. So I've been thinking about this for a long time, and I felt it was really, really important for NPR to be there when schools reopened. I had a virologist tell me early on, if you can't get the universities open, we're not going to be able to get societies open. And so, yeah, I lobbied pretty hard this summer, and kind of with the right safety measures, we convinced our editors to send us on the road.
What are those? What are some of those safety requirements they put in place?
I'll let Lauren take that. She's kind of the mastermind behind the production and kind of everything we do.
Yeah. Right, so, Lauren. I mean, we made the decision to sort of merge our own bubbles after getting tested ourselves. And then, you know, when we're on the airplane, we're wearing N95 masks. We're doing the majority of our interviews outside, which I will say in the Georgia heat with the mosquitoes has been trying at times. But it certainly has been helpful. And obviously we're, you know, miking people with a mic that's been disinfected in between interviews. And we've got a 6-foot boom pole that we're holding the mic. You know, radio is usually a much more up close and personal medium. But we've got a lot of, you know, disinfecting measures in place now.
Yeah, I always tell people when I'm about to interview them that I'm going to stand uncomfortably close in order to get that good public radio sound, but not so much in the pandemic. What is it like on the road, Lauren? What are you seeing as you go from place to place? Are there obvious differences in, you know, both the government rules that are in place as well as how people in various parts of the country are behaving?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that across the country, a lot of the big picture things are very similar. So you see, you know, people trying to make the most of outdoor spaces, right? We're seeing a lot of spike ball on the quad. We also are seeing, though, in some places and many places, I think Illinois being the exception, a lot of indoor dining. And that's one of those places where it feels like a little bit of a loophole. You can't eat or drink with your mask on. And so even these bars with reduced capacity, you're seeing students line up outside of them without masks on. And once they're inside, you can't necessarily control where or how they move. So we've seen that kind of everywhere we go is sort of some concerning issues that could lead to spread.
Wow. And where are you guys? I mean, I don't mean to dwell on this travel thing, but as I said, I'm not getting much out beyond the grocery store and a few other, you know, essential trips. What are you in? I presume you're staying in hotels. I mean, are you using your elbows to open doorknobs? How is that? What is that like? What has that aspect of your trip been like?
Yeah, we're staying in hotels. We're living in our rental car pretty much. I mean, you know, we don't sleep there, but that's the kind of the main operation HQ for us. And I think we did about 1300 miles, you said, Lauren, on the last car driving across the Midwest. But yeah, we're staying in hotels. I mean, hotel capacity everywhere is really low. And you know, that has economic implications, of course. But yeah, we've been staying in hotels and driving everywhere. We have flown, of course, to get to different places. We're wearing our masks on the flight. I think many of our flights have been more full than we anticipated. So that was kind of a surprise.
And I will say the one thing that was really interesting is that even on these planes, there is sort of this, if you're drinking or eating loophole where you don't have to wear a mask. And I think it's really interesting to see adults choosing not to wear this mask, where we're focusing so much on student behavior and student compliance with mask wearing. And it's just a good reminder that like even the general public isn't necessarily following those rules.
Yeah. Personally, we have not eaten in restaurants at all. And a friend of mine says you're probably safer, you know, licking the table than you are breathing the air in a restaurant. So I don't really know how you go about doing that. But all right, I have spent too much time probably on this aspect.
Well,
of the
we have
trip.
Not eaten at an indoor restaurant. Is that right, Lauren? Yeah,
that's right.
I think we have.
So what are you guys?
We
I mean,
get a
you
lot
doing
of takeout.
Like okay, takeout. I was like yeah, gas station burritos get, and Lunchables
find...
every night. Or
yeah, we find like abandoned picnic tables behind places and we eat there for lunch. Like we're always on scoping out kind of like outdoor seating away from other people.
Wow. Okay. So Alyssa, let's start with the, you know, first stop of your trip, University of Georgia, Athens. What was the reopening plan there?
Well, they're bringing a lot of students back. I mean, we were there for move-in, which was, you know, there are many COVID precautions. So usually move-in is kind of this very frenetic, lots of people squeezing in elevators up in dorms. At the University of Georgia, they spaced it out over several days. Many days you had to sign up for a slot. You were only allowed to bring two helpers in with you. So you got a wristband. So we met a lot of moms outside dorms where the students had selected their siblings or their dads to help them move up, and the mom had to wait outside the dorm. But we were going there because it was one of the schools that looked the most normal, right? There was no big mass testing protocol like there is at the University of Illinois. They were bringing students back, thousands of them, into the dorms, and they were pushing for many, many in-person classes. So that's kind of why we picked Georgia to start our trip.
And Lauren, you mentioned a little bit about this earlier, but you went to downtown Athens where students, again, had just moved in. What were you seeing downtown at campus bars, restaurants?
Well, it's funny
there?
You say that because we were kind of, you know, we were trolling the town looking for the parties. And, we drove down, you know, the frat rows and the sorority rows, and it was just dead silent. And we were just saying to ourselves, they have to be somewhere. Like students, there's 37,000 students on this campus. And we went to downtown around like 10 or 11 at night, and the bars were just, it was such a scene. And while bars, I think, did have capacity limits, people were standing at the doors. I saw guys whispering in each other's ears, you know, they're high-fiving, they're hugging, they're catching up on summer. And I think that's sort of where you're seeing like all of the good behavior on campus, the masking, the social distancing, you know, the careful move-in protocols kind of falls apart in the evenings.
Yeah. And we saw students like all masked up during the day. Like it was a very big shift from kind of on campus to what Lauren is describing at night. And we've been seeing that across the country of kind of the on campus, the mask wearing, the social distancing, and then off campus, not so much.
I know you probably have no way of knowing this. Is it the same students? Are they sort of doing like, you know, COVID theater during the day and then, you know, letting loose at night? Or are there just different groups maybe who are engaging in these activities?
Well, I won't speculate on that, but I will say that, you know, the rules are more stringent on campus than in the bar. Like kind of what Lauren was talking about earlier with this, like drinking and eating. I don't know. We started to call it the loophole, but you can't eat or drink with a mask on. And so the rules are different in those spaces. So it is possible that it's the same students. They're just functioning within kind of the system that is set up.
Yeah. Listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Alyssa Nedwerny, who is a reporter with NPR and the NPR education team, as well as Lauren McGaughey, who's a senior producer with the NPR education team. And you also went to the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, when students were moving back out. So what was the reopening plan there at that university? How did it change, Alyssa?
Well, so they, similar to the University of Georgia, they allowed students to move into the dorms and they had some in-person classes. But very quickly, their numbers started to go up. And actually, this is kind of an interesting comparison, because they had about 130 cases reported, 130 positive tests on campus. And they decided to go all online and started to de-densify their dorms. So essentially, they sent students home. Now that is just has kind of blown me away as we've gone into fall and seen many, many much larger outbreaks on campus and kind of no immediate action. Like, I think a lot of folks were looking at what was happening at UNC and thinking, oh, this is what's going to happen everywhere. And then it really didn't. It hasn't.
Interesting. I mean, Lauren, do you know, was student partying a factor there at UNC as well?
I mean, certainly that's something we've seen across the board. We've seen universities sort of point it at student behavior. But I will say, like, this is the kind of thing that only takes a couple of students to kind of end up spreading it, because we've talked to students who they have a small bubble within, you know, their dorm or their apartment. And, you know, it really just takes one person going out and spreading it to a group of students who are largely following the rules. I think it's really hard when you've got, you know, four suite mates in a dorm. And so I think that's why you started to see some of the clusters popping up at UNC. And I think it's also worth pointing out that UNC, you know, their ability to quarantine students was low too. I think they had, you know, just shy of 130 beds for the entire student population. So I think, you know, thinking about where are all these folks going to go to quarantine is also something that I think universities are trying to figure out as they're building this airplane.
Yeah, building the airplane while flying it. Alyssa, I want to talk now about the University of Illinois. Why did you decide to make the Urbana campus a stop on your road trip?
Well, everywhere we went, and kind of a lot of the epidemiologists we had talked to had been pointing us to what was happening at the University of Illinois. There was a study that came out at the end of summer that had said, if you want to contain this on a college campus, you really need to be testing twice a week. And there weren't a lot of colleges that were planning on doing that, except for the University of Illinois. And, you know, testing had come up again and again. The University of Georgia, of course, they were testing 300 students voluntary every day. A lot of campuses had no real mass mandatory testing regimens at all. And so we wanted to go to the University of Illinois just to see what it was like and if it would work. You know, like, I think we're all kind of looking for answers in this. We're going to have to open up college at some point, and so we're kind of looking for how to do it right. So we went to the University of Illinois to see this big mass testing program that we had just heard so much about.
And I mean, you arrived at the Urbana-Champaign campus at an interesting time, right? Because that's when cases were spiking, and the chancellor sent out a letter saying that there were some students who tested positive but were going to or hosting parties anyway to avoid contact tracing.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, I think as with any good story, it gets more and more complex, right? We came for one reason and then the story changed. While we were there, exactly, they basically put the campus into a 2-week lockdown because they had as many positive cases as they had been expecting, as they had been modeling for the whole semester. So that their models were really blown out of the water. And they attributed that to folks not isolating. So they find out they're positive and they don't do anything about it, right? They go to a party, they host a party, they go out, they see their friends. They didn't count on that. And that was actually something we hadn't really expected to see either. I think we were kind of so focused on people partying or getting COVID and actually kind of less on the perhaps intentional spreading of COVID. So that happened while we were there. So it was really interesting to see kind of this model that everyone said, oh, this is how they're going to be able to do it right, have maybe a little bit of cracks in the foundation.
Intentional spreading. I don't think I've heard it phrased just right, just quite that way. And that is a striking way to put it. Yeah. I want to ask you about, you know, we need to take a quick break here, but I do want to ask, you know, about some other aspects of your trip, and you went on to Michigan. And, you know, before that, you also talked to some contact tracers here in Illinois. So if you can stick with us, we need to take a quick break. Listeners, the phone lines are still open, 800-222-9455. If you have a question for our guests about what they're seeing out in the world as they visited many college campuses across America, the number is 800-222-9455. More to come after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey, and we're speaking with Alyssa Nadworny, a reporter with NPR's education team, and Lauren McGaughey, a senior producer, also with NPR's education team. They've been taking a road trip across the country to learn more about colleges and university reopening plans. If you have a question for them, join the conversation. Give us a call at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. So, Lauren, right before the break, we were talking about your visit to the Urbana campus, and you also visited contact tracers at the local public health department in Champaign-Urbana. Some of them are students. Were they effectively, I mean, could they effectively reach students, or were they, you know, leaving a lot of voicemails? How was that going?
Yeah, it was kind of a mixed bag. You know, we talked to about six or seven students who are doing this. A lot of them are majoring in public health and things like that. And their job is basically to make phone calls for their entire shift, basically informing someone of their positive test results and then telling them the steps they need to take to go into quarantine. They said that they've gotten a lot of people screening their calls, not signing up for the text message services. But that after, you know, after the lockdown had been announced, they said they were getting a lot more pickups. And it was really interesting to talk to them because they really experienced the range of reaction to getting a positive coronavirus diagnosis. You know, we talked to one girl who said she called a freshman who couldn't sleep at all when they found out that their roommate had tested positive. You know, they were kind of just freaking out in their dorm room. And another student who was so anxious that he was getting tested every day of the week. And so they kind of end up being a little bit, you know, of the voice of calm for some of these folks.
Wow.
One contact tracer told us she thought she called it a COVID therapist, which I loved.
Wow. So after you visit Champaign-Urbana, you go on to Michigan, and of course, a huge college town in Michigan is Ann Arbor, and there you meet Kevin McShane. We have a little bit of tape you generously shared with us. I don't know if we want to listen to that first, and then, or if you want to just set it up, tell us why you spoke to Kevin.
Well, Kevin is a senior, he's a computer science major, and he lives in a big off-campus house with 23 of his friends, which I think is just indicative of a lot of these off-campus houses are just built for a lot of people, which means socializing whether you have a party or not.
All right, let's take a listen to that Kevin McShane clip.
We haven't been having parties because anything that we would try to have, the police pretty much immediately show up. With us guys, we'll just be hanging out on the porch, and people will walk by and like take videos of like 10 of us. And it's, you know, clearly not a party, but people are like trying to say, you know, you kind of see like, look what these kids are doing.
So is that a theme, this sort of, you know, I guess, attempts to shame college students over this behavior? Are you seeing that across the country?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think there's a couple things happening here, right? Like, I think as a society, we're not quite sure like what to shame folks for. We've talked to a number of epidemiologists who say, actually, hanging out on the porch, playing beer pong in the driveway, those are pretty low risk activities. And of course, like that's what people are seeing. So that's what people are taking pictures of, kind of like Kevin said. So I think, you know, we're not seeing universities really step up and kind of provide alternative activities or outdoor spaces or heat lamps to try and kind of encourage what we know is safe. And the fear is that as you police these kids, as you kind of shame them, it pushes the party back into the basement where we don't want it to be, you know? So they go off their porch and they go down into a basement with closed windows, and that's where they're hanging out.
I will say, though, I think we have seen just incredible amounts of creativity on every college campus. But, you know, we have seen big screen TVs and projectors rigged up on the sides of houses so people can watch, you know, basketball games outside, and people putting lights and chairs on their porch. We talked to a group of girls who were, you know, huddled around a bonfire in their front yard. So there is definitely some creativity in action there.
Okay. I want to go now to the phones, our 800-222-9455. We have a call from DeKalb, home of Northern Illinois University. Steve, welcome to the 21st. Thanks for joining us.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I attended the city council meeting in DeKalb last night, and the city was reacting to a lot of student gatherings outdoors where there was not social distancing or mask wearing that had been occurring. So the city passed an ordinance that created potential fines for behavior in such behavior where there's not social distancing or mask wearing. I was wondering if there are other municipalities that have had the same experience and have passed any ordinances along those lines.
Yeah, and I don't know if Lauren or Alyssa, you want to take that? And I mean, I guess I'm curious, you mentioned that you see a difference between the on-campus life and the campus town life. And I know at least at many places in Illinois, the campus town is run by the city government. The university doesn't really have say over that. Do you see any tension there? Do you see cities trying to clamp down on the campus portions of their municipalities?
We've seen this, yeah, in a lot of different college towns. Most recently, we were in Ann Arbor. And we talked to a city council member there who kind of said they don't have that much control over what the university does. And yet they're kind of they're met with the consequences of those decisions. You know, so it's a very there's a lot of tension in that relationship. They did pass an emergency order in Ann Arbor that limited outdoor gatherings to 25 people. And there are fines if those are disobeyed. So that sounds a little bit similar to what your caller is talking about.
Yeah,
but I think the tensions between the towns and the universities are very real, and they're felt across the country.
Well, and you shared some tape as well from Julie Grant, who's on the city council in Ann Arbor. Let's take a listen to that.
So we know we have students coming from Florida, Texas, California. These are some of our biggest feeder states outside of Michigan. And we were hit so hard with COVID as a state early on. And you know, we know people who were family members of those body bags that were stacked up in the Detroit hospitals. There's a real fear that that could happen again.
Is this a common thread among college towns? I mean, we've had callers, as we've done other segments on this show, from people in college towns who are just sort of bracing themselves for what the students might be bringing in with them. Is that a common theme?
Yeah, we've definitely... We've heard that. Julie said, you know, some people in her neighborhood are making bets on when this is all going to fall apart, when the big outbreak will be. I think one of the things that's kind of worth bringing up is what's happening in East Lansing, where Michigan State University is, because there's only about 1,000 students living in the dorms there, and all the classes are online. But East Lansing is having a big coronavirus outbreak among the student population that moved back. And I think it just kind of illustrates universities don't have as much control as they might like to think. Kind of, you know, over what students do and how they behave and how they socialize.
Yeah. Let me, Alyssa, I want to ask big picture. How do you think America has done when it comes to universities reopening, right? I mean, you visited places where things went as planned, some places where they didn't go as planned. You know, if you had to give a letter grade, how have we done?
Well, you know, it is super varied. I think we've really been talking about a lot of big state schools now, flagships mostly, but it's wide ranging of kind of the college response. We visited a community college in Grand Rapids, where most is online. You know, they're a commuter campus, so they don't have dorms, and they've had very few cases. We've also visited some small private universities, you know, 2,000, 1,000 students, and they as well have been able to keep those numbers really low. So I don't know if I'd want to give a grade. I think one big question is certainly for the state schools, the flagships, is what does all this student spread mean? What does it lead to? You know, how does it get into the community and kind of what are the repercussions there? That's kind of the big question before I give them a grade.
Well, as we like to say in public radio, time will tell, and we'll keep an eye on that story. We've been speaking with Alyssa Nadworny, who's a reporter with NPR's education team, and Lauren Magaki, also a producer with NPR's education team. They've been taking a road trip across the country to learn more about colleges and university reopening plans. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you.